Okay, we're going to call the House, or excuse me, Senate Finance meeting to order. With us today is Co-Chair Kelly, Vice Chair Fairclough, Senator Bishop, and Senator Mike Dunleavy, who was first one here. Good job. Okay, we're going to continue public testimony and our hearing on Senate Bill 111, which is the repeal of the secondary school exit exam. And then after that, we will take up the overview of the supplemental budget. And I'm thinking if we get finished with both these items today, we won't have any need to meet tomorrow, unless, of course, the committee wants to meet. I was just thinking after Monday night, that was we deserve a day off, right? So, okay, we'll see how we go here. So is there anything to come before the committee before we get started? If not, let's go to public testimony again on the high school exit exam. I think we had started the process, didn't get through to everybody, so we will continue that. And we'll start out with Petersburg. And it looks like there's a Rachel Ector and Rick Dormer in Petersburg with the Petersburg School District. Are you online and with us this morning?
Yes, I'm here. For the record, my name is Rachel Ector, and I'm the high school counselor for Petersburg High School.
Okay, well, go ahead and proceed with your testimony, please.
Okay. Twice each school year, much of our school staff time and energy is put into organizing the test days, locations, accommodations, and groupings for the 6 days of testing that also disrupt and keep us from going into instructional days, followed by the collecting, accounting for, and shipping the tests. In a small district, we wear many hats and all serve a number of needs for our community's children. When weeks of our time is dedicated to these tests, it takes time away from some great needs that we could be serving for our kids. We have also had a number of students that have not been able to truly show their abilities and potential through this test. Due to the high pressures that come with the test, many students feel anxious and do not perform to their ability, although we have seen in the classroom that these kids have the skills deserving of a diploma. Bottom line, I believe that HSGQE is not in the best service of our children. And I hand it over to Rick Dormer, our principal.
Okay, thank you. Rick?
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Rick Dormer. I'm the principal of Petersburg High School. Thank you for giving me a few moments to testify in support of eliminating the high school graduate qualifying exam. Here in Petersburg, just to make it a personal story, we don't believe this high-stakes test has been an adequate representation of our students' skills to be college and career ready. Personally, we've had a couple of young ladies who our staff deemed ready for a diploma, had completed all the requirements, and both of these ladies in the last 3 years missed it by 1 point. And that 1 point kept them from getting a diploma that our staff, including administration, deemed that they were ready to move on to the next step. And one of the young ladies was ready to go to University of Alaska System, as you know, and because she didn't have a diploma, was not eligible for financial aid, which her and her family desperately needed, and she was unable to pursue that further education that really would have taken her to a different level for her and her family, and just some dreams just shattered there because of the HSCQE and 1 point that kept her from moving on. We have a couple students who wander downtown and try to pick up odd jobs who dropped out early because they told me personally, hey, I just can't pass that test. And struggling students, but again, just as quitting as early as 15 and 16 years old. So, again, we appreciate your time. Just want to testify some personal stories here in Petersburg. Again, just supporting the elimination of the high school graduate qualifying exam. Thank you very much.
Great. Well, thank you for your testimony this morning. Was there anyone else there in Petersburg?
No, thank you. That was it. Just us two.
Okay, great. Thanks. I also want to welcome Senator Olson to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Morning. Okay, let's go now to Matsu, Gene Stone.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Gene Stone. I'm the Assistant Superintendent for the Matsu Borough School District. And thank you for the opportunity to make comment. I just would like to share that the Matsu Borough School District would like to offer support for Senate Bill 190. Discontinuing the practice of high-stakes testing, specifically the high school graduation qualifying exam, we believe it's an important step in restoring fairness in our education system. students have suffered disproportionate consequences for not passing the high school qualifying exam. While the intent of this exam was to ensure all students were prepared for future post-high school challenges, the outcome has not yielded the desired result. The Matsubara School District believes there are a number of assessments such as SAT, ACT, ASVAB, AccuPlacer, WorkKeys, etc., that can provide institutions and employers with a clear picture of a student's readiness for work, military, college, or vocational training. We believe our community, as represented by our Matsubara School District, supports local control for the determination of the assessments and curriculum requirements that will lead to a high school diploma. And we look forward to our continued work with increasing rigor through high standards and more meaningful measures for student, teacher, and administrator performance. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Stone. Questions? Seeing none, thank you for joining us this morning. Steve Atwater, Soldotna.
Yeah, Chair Meyer, members of the committee, this is Steve Atwater, Superintendent of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. I'm calling today in favor of passing Senate Bill 111, the repeal of the high school exit exam. We think it's inappropriate to do that. Strongly believe that the exam has run its course. It's no longer doing what it was intended to do. But really, the only point I want to make outside of what's been said already is that the exam was put in place under the guise of needing a quality control for the school districts in Alaska. And here on the Kenai, we believe that we do have that quality control and the exam is not necessary. We are able to ensure that our graduates are worthy of graduating. And just as a side note, more than 95% of our kids pass the test, and it's just become a distraction and an additional burden that we don't feel is necessary. So in sum, I encourage you to move this to the floor. We do believe that SB 111 is a good bill, and it should be passed. Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us this morning, Mr. Atwater. Mr. Atwater, I have a question. So do you believe there's other ways to accurately measure how much a student learns? I mean, it used to be once they had a high school diploma, then that pretty much assured us that they knew the basics. I believe the governor is recommending SAT, ACT, or work keys. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think each of those exams that the governor is proposing is a good way to provide information about what students are, how well they're geared up for what's next. But I believe that the school districts do have enough quality control inside of their system that they're not issuing credits to let kids just pass along. I think that should be continued to be stressed by the department. And ultimately, I would like to see an end-of-course exam so that for common credits that are issued, that there would be an end-of-course exam that each district administers as a way to ensure that quality control.
Okay, very good. Senator Fairclough has a question for you, Mr. Atwater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am looking at, and maybe this is a question to Senator Stevens himself, but I'm looking at the historical graduation rates, and while it might not be the same for the Kenai Peninsula, we have seen an increase once the tests were implemented, at least according to the figures provided by Senator Stevens in 2004 with a graduation rate of 62.9%. We've actually bumped that graduation rate up to 71.7% in 2013. So is something else in the system changed beside the high-stakes test?
Well, first of all, when the exam came into place, I was the superintendent of the Lake Peninsula School District, a very small rural district, and it had an immediate impact, a very positive impact, and it required everybody to, if you want to use the term, pull up their socks a little bit and take things a little more seriously. So I think the initial impact of the exam when it was put into place was very positive. It caused everyone to reflect on where they were and to ensure that that was happening. Since then, I think that districts have exceeded that minimum threshold for the most part. I think the graduation rate going up is partially due to the whole accountability system that was part of the exit exam. I don't think you could attribute it solely to that exit exam. I think it was part of everything that took place with regard to accountability with No Child Left Behind. So I think that's part of the puzzle. I just think at this point it's run its course. I think we've done what it needs to do, and it's really not as relevant an issue as it was.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Atwater, for joining us this morning.
Okay, let's pleasure. Thank you.
Yep. Let's go to Fairbanks. Carrie Boyd.
Hello.
this carry? Carry? Is this she or he?
She.
She? You know Carrie?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Carrie, are you with us? We want you to be with us. She hung up. Oh, wow. Okay. Okay, well, she was the last one I had on my list to testify. Was there anyone here in Juneau who wanted to testify on Senate Bill 111? Okay. We're going to take a brief at ease. I think we got Carrie trying to call back in. So, brief at ease. Okay, we're back. Ms. Boyd didn't call back, so we hope she still does call us back. But we, since then, have picked up Mike Coons from Palmer, who's asked to testify on Senate Bill 111. So, Mr. Coons, go ahead, sir.
Oh, okay. This is Mike Coons. Can you hold on just a second? I just had to run upstairs. I have my testimony in front of me on the computer. Okay, my name is Mike Coons from Lazy Mountain, Palmer area, and I'm speaking for myself. I support SB 111. However, I do have problems with the change found on the last page, lines 25 through 29, transition for student testing process progress. My problem with this is that this severely impacts young adults and moving forward now as adults. Yes, I realize this will be the last class to take the exit exam. It is a logistical matter more than anything else. I'm sure there will be those students who look at this as an opportunity to see how well they will do for the upcoming SATs they plan to take. There will be others, like I was at 18, who will take it because we know we must, and what the heck, see how well I do and not be worried about it. Then there will be those who weren't going to pass the test anyway, and within that are those who have not passed all required classes and may not get a diploma under any circumstances. So, let this exit exam die a quiet death with minimal impact on the students. For to do the transition, this then impacts those trying to go into the military, since most require a diploma for enlistment, and those students who will look at this as just another hoop to jump through. Myself, if I were not going into the military, I'd just take the test. If I didn't pass the math, I'd get my transcripts for the entire high school years and submit that to any future employer instead of a sheepskin diploma. I strongly believe that when I see a problem, to not only identify it, but to come up with alternatives. I strongly believe that when I see a problem, not only identify it, but come up with an alternative to fix that problem, thus delete the transition. So delete the transition testing in progress and instead insert procedures for graduation. Section 14.03.075, Career and College and Career Assessments A. A student shall be issued a secondary school diploma upon completing all required course studies throughout high school with a 2.0 GPA or higher. B. A student who fails to qualify for the issuance of a diploma under A of this section will be held back so the student can retake the needed courses to meet the 2.0 GPA requirement. Upon successful completion, the diploma will be issued. As to line 30, change December 1st, 2014 back to July 1st, 2014. In addition to the above, I'm against HB 278, Section 2, that impacts this legislation as well, and when public testimony comes for that, I'll have further comments specifically to that. In answer to Senator Dunleavy's question about employers looking at the exit exam, my last employer only asked if we graduated from high school, where and when. In addition, after I retired from the Air Force, I didn't have to take any college entrance exam, nor did my college look at my SAT scores. In point of fact, I earned academic scholarships in spite of scoring the bottom one-third of my SATs and a graduated Phi Theta Kappa with a 3.78. Thank you, and I'm willing to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Coons. I don't see any questions, but I do appreciate you joining us this morning. Okay, so was there anybody here in Juneau who wanted to testify on Senate Bill 111 before we close public testimony? Anybody else online? All right, we're going to close public testimony on Senate Bill 111 and open it up for discussion. As you know, the same topic, a little different, it's written a little bit differently, is in the governor's education omnibus bill. I believe this bill does not recommend a replacement. The governor's bill did recommend SAT, ACT, work keys, or something similar to that. So my intent would be to hold this until we can mirror it up with the omnibus bill and just bring both up again at that time and determine where to go. But if there's any more discussion on this before we set it aside, Senator Dudley.
Thank you, through the Chair. Just a quick point. As you go through that process that you just mentioned, within this bill, it's not just the high school qualifying exam. So I just want to make note of that whatever changes or merging occurs, there are items in here that talk about reporting out to the public. There's items in here that talk about what parental input into certain aspects of the system. And I think parts of this bill were a result of SB 36 more than a decade ago. And I'm just wondering, when we go through that process, and if there's any merging that we certainly should have the department come here and explain some of these other items in here and what they do. And if there are tools that still assist us in understanding what's happening with education in our schools and school districts, we may want to keep those items. I just want to make note of that. Thank you.
Very good. Senator Dunleavy, and certainly with your background in education, we'll want your expertise when we come to that juncture. Senator Kelly, did you have something? Everybody's got a cold here, looks like, today. Okay, is there anything else on Senate Bill 111? I don't know what the fiscal note was on this, if there's any. Tim, do you want to come back up to the table for a second? Oh, yeah, there is. Oh, yeah, okay. The fiscal note was actually a credit, wasn't it? Okay, we like those. Anything else you want to mention?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Just one couple of points, maybe. I don't want to hold this up any further, but to respond to the last testifier's point about the transition language, just want to help make it clear to the committee that the 2017 phase-out was an effort to give folks a chance. This year would be the last year that they would take an exit exam, and if they fail that exam, or any student that has failed it in the past, would have up until 2017 to get a fair shake to take that exam and have an opportunity to pass it. That's simply the simple reason behind that transition to phase out. That's also consistent with the governor's bill. That's all I have for now, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, very good. Senator Firk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This may have been brought up yesterday, but I had to step out of the room. Do we enter into the contract for support contracts to implement this on an annual basis, do you know, or is it a period of time contract?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, I'm not acquainted with the details of their contract process, but it's my understanding, and I could be mistaken, that it is an annual process.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Senator Fairclough. If there's no other questions, then we will set this bill aside. Thank you, Mr. Lampkins, for joining us this morning. And let's take a brief at ease as we move now to the supplemental budget. Okay, we're going to bring the Senate Finance Committee meeting back to order. We are now taking up the supplemental budget, and with us is Ms. Rayfield. Karen, could you state your name and affiliation on the record for us? We all know you, but for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Karen Rayfield, the Director of the Office of Management and Budget. I'm here this morning to give you an overview of the supplemental request that was delivered to you on the 15th day. With me this morning in the room is Kelly O'Sullivan, our Chief Budget Analyst, and also there are representatives from the departments that have items in the supplemental bill, so if you have more detailed questions than what I can answer, we can certainly ask them to come to the table at your pleasure. As you know, the supplemental bill is brought forward for items that were not anticipated when the budgets passed last spring. The total supplemental bill before you is $53,370,100. I have two items that we'll be working from. There's a summary, a one-page summary document, and then an eight-page spreadsheet that I'll walk through with you. The spreadsheet is in bill order, page and line number order, so we'll be walking through it. At a high level, out of that $53.4 million request, less than $1 million of that amount is for state agency operations. Almost $48 million of the request is related to two items, the fire suppression supplemental and also disaster relief. We have nearly $2 million in settlements that are negotiated throughout the year, and $2.4 million in emergency repairs that aren't covered by disaster relief funds. So with that, Mr. Chairman, we'll turn to the spreadsheet. The supplemental bill has 17 sections, and I think we can walk through them fairly quickly, but I'm happy to answer questions as we go or whatever you prefer. So, Mr. Chairman, walking down the spreadsheet, page 1 of 8, on line 2 of the spreadsheet will be the first supplemental request in the operating portion of the budget. It has to do with the Department of Administration, the Office of Public Advocacy. We're requesting $193,000 in general funds to address caseload and appellant backlog issues. This, as you know, the Office of Public Advocacy and Public Defender have been two budgets that we have over the last several years been working very hard to bring you a budget that did not require additional supplemental funding. Given their significant caseload increases, they really are not able to address the workload and the backlog in this current fiscal year. We are looking for or considering this item as well for a budget amendment that, as you know, we need to bring forward to you by the 30th day. So just to flag for you, we are looking at this for a potential budget amendment for 15 as well. On line 3 of the spreadsheet, you'll see a similar request for the Public Defender Agency of $650,000 in general funds, again, for their caseload and appellant backlog. On line 4 of the spreadsheet, Mr. Chairman, under the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, we're asking basically for a fund source change addressing the one-time payment that was approved by the legislature last year related to the GGU health trust payment. We were unable to collect revenue, both federal and interagency receipts that we had estimated for that one-time payment. So we're requesting $48,000 in general funds in order for that payment to occur. Line 5 of the spreadsheet, this is for the fiscal year 2014 fire suppression activity. As you know, we had significant fires last spring and summer. Our operating budget does contain a kind of a baseline fire suppression amount of less than $7 million. The Department of Natural Resources works very closely with their federal partners in firefighting on lands in Alaska, and when they go through and figure out which portions of those will be charged to the state, that's what we bring forward to you in the supplemental bill. The request is for $22,769,400 in general funds.
Karen?
Yes.
I'd like to interrupt you just for a second. I know you're on a roll, but $22 million is a lot of money, and obviously we can't prevent fires, but is there some question about how this particular fire got started? Wasn't there some thought that maybe the military caused the fire and that maybe we should build a federal government for this?
Mr. Chairman, I know the department can speak more specifically to that issue. The supplemental itself is a reflection of several fires, but I think you're referring to one of the specific fires. I do know that in the work that they do with our federal partners, that this does include, or it it's based on the amount of federal funding that is also available to pay for these fires. So there's there as we go through the, you get the legislature gets letters from the administration reporting on the expenditures to date, so you're apprised of the situation, and then we bring this forward in the supplemental. If you'd like, I could have the department come forward and talk about the one specific item that you're asking.
Would that be McHugh?
I believe Ms. Jean Davis would be here, but...
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. Jean?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jean Davis. I'm the director of the Support Services Division for the Department of Natural Resources, and so we're the department that does the wildland firefighting. Okay. The one particular fire that you are talking about, I do believe they are still working on the identification of ownership for that, but that was primarily on federal land, and was the firefighting response was made by the feds on that one. So the majority of the expenses for that fire were incurred on the federal side. So the general fund money for us is, as Ms. Rayfield said, a compilation of our entire fire season for all of the fires that occurred on state land.
So if I hear what you're saying, you're comfortable with the amount that the federal government has paid in fighting that fire?
So for the record, I would like to have our director of forestry just make sure that I'm not going to give you a misstatement, and I'll clarify with, but we're not incurring the majority of those expenses for that fire. They're not reflected in the state side of the budget.
Okay, well, let me just ask you, are you still seeking more funds from the federal government to pay for that?
We are still exchanging bills with the feds for their share of our firefighting costs, yes.
Okay.
But could I say that it would not affect or reduce the amount of the $22 million?
Okay, how much more are you seeking? And yeah, any idea?
Well, the number that I have for you right now is a calendar year 13 estimate that we will be receiving about $33 million of reimbursement from the feds for our expenses of fighting fire on their protection, or on their land under our protection area.
Okay. Any additional questions on this particular subject? Okay, very good. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, on line 6 of the spreadsheet, you'll see a request of $19,000 in public school trust fund receipts, and this is for the investment management fees. Investment management fees are basically charged as a percent of the market value of invested assets. We've seen an increase in the invested assets, and therefore an amount necessary to pay for the management. You'll see this as we turn to page 2 of the spreadsheet on two other funds under investment management under the Treasury Division at the Department of Revenue. If you turn to page 2, page 2 of 8 on line 7, you'll see a request for $7,000 from the Retiree Health Insurance Fund. And again, this is for the market value of invested assets and their management fees. On line 8, you'll see $16,000 related to investment management of the Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund. So those are the operating numbers section of the supplemental bill, and we shift to the capital component of the supplemental bill. On line 11 of the spreadsheet, you'll see a request for an appropriation of $500,000 to the Inter Island Ferry Authority. This is the ferry that provides daily service to the Prince of Wales Island in southern southeast Alaska. And we have from time to time contributed resource to the Inner Island Ferry to keep that system operating and providing that vital transportation link.
Karen, can we hold up on that? Senator Dunleavy, please.
Thank you, through the Chair. Ms. Rayfield, This is under capital, but there's been somewhat of a history of putting more money into it. I think in 03 it was $200,000, 07, $500,000, 09, $1.5 million, 11, $350,000, 12, $250,000. Has there been thought given to a better plan on how to address this as opposed to coming back, I'm not saying every year, but quite often, for an infusion of funds into the capital side of this?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunleavy, we have actually spent quite a bit of time with the Inter-Island Ferry Authority trying to look at ways to assist, if possible, for their system to become more self-supporting. They formed many years ago. There was an idea that they would actually be providing not only this one route to into Hollis, but also a northern route. Clearly, the ridership has not panned out the way they like. They've made some very difficult decisions in letting that northern route go and trying to hone in on how best to reduce their annual operating costs. One of the reasons that we request this in capital, in the capital bill, is it's basically requested as a named recipient grant to the entity. I've been reluctant to recommend that we make this an ongoing annual appropriation, and would much rather have it as a discussion that we have on an annual basis whether or not we need to support the effort. If we are unable to support the Inter-Island Ferry and the service to Prince of Wales Island, it's entirely likely that we would need to revisit the Alaska Marine Highway providing some level of service to Prince Wales Island. We believe that that would end up costing more than what we're currently doing. I think there would be some complexity actually in going in and unraveling the authority itself and the vessels that were purchased partially with Federal Transportation FTA funds. I can't remember the acronym right now, but so there's a lot of issues around doing that. The Ferry Authority has been very helpful in providing us with their financial information to look at. So at this point, our recommendation is just to take a look at it. We have requested this funding as a supplemental. Last year, we did have a discussion about whether or not we should put money in 14. And we have requested funding in the 15 budget as well, but I still think it's important for us to look at this before we build it into kind of our annual spending plan.
Thank you, through the chair. I too would look forward to such a discussion regarding the ferry system. Thank you.
Yeah, very good. Let me understand this correctly. So we have a contract with this Inter Ferry Authority. For a certain amount, and they always go over that amount, and that's why we have to do. How does it work,
Mr. Chairman? We don't have a contract with the Ferry Authority. They are an independent authority that was I can't tell you exactly when it was established, but several years ago. So they took over actually the ferry. The Alaska Marine Highway used to go over to Prince of Wales, and when the Ferry Authority was formed in statute, they took over that responsibility. So they're providing the service. They, through federal authorization and loans, purchased two vessels that they operate. This, what the state of Alaska has been providing off and on for a number of years, is some level of general fund support, particularly when fuel prices and ridership were down and they weren't able to cover their operating costs. So if the authority were not able to provide the service, we believe that the Marine Highway would need to come back in and take over that service. And again, it would probably be at greater expense than what we're doing right now.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rayfield, when you look at the inception of the IFA, what's been the state subsidy history? Has it been increasing, decreasing over the last several years related to this independent authority that's out there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I can get you the details of the expenditure history of what we've provided, and my answer is it's varied. I think that one year there was a fairly significant appropriation to help with some debt service again, because, you know, helping them with their annual debt service freed up some ability for them to manage their operating budget a little bit better. But I think that was the largest appropriation that's coming to mind directly. But I think our contributions have varied from $300,000 to $500,000, again, with some discussion about how best to do that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to voice my concern that the Marine Highway System is one of those systems that continues to have a larger and larger deficit over the number of years, and with contract negotiations going now, I just don't want us to get into the same trap that we got into that we are currently in with that system, that where people would rather fly on the jet than they would be on a ferry system that's out there.
I understand. Karen, are both vessels currently operating?
Mr. Chairman, they've only been, I would have to confirm this, but I believe they've only been running one of the vessels, and one is the Stikine and one is the Prince of Wales, and I don't remember which one is running, and the other one is available in the event that they have to go into dry dock for some.
Okay. Senator Dillon.
To the Chair, just a brief add-on to what Senator Olson said. Take a look at this to see how many folks are actually taking a ferry and flying. And I know that up in my neck of the woods, folks would like to use a bridge as well to get to where they're going. I just want to make that note. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other, Senator Kelly, do you have questions on this? Okay. All right, Karen, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll continue on page 2 of 8, line 12. We have a request for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities of $2,408,100. These are for specific emergency repairs, and in the backup that was provided, there's a list of the projects. These are projects that did not qualify for disaster funds. There's, I believe, a certain cap on the amount that's eligible, but there's a list of projects in there from flooding, substantial flooding, and other ice jams that occurred last year that DOT went in and repaired some airports, some roads, bridges, those types of things. So you'll see the list of projects in your backup. If we could go to page 3 of 8, the next item, this would start with the language appropriations in the supplemental bill. On line 16, you'll see section 6A is a request from the Department of Environmental Conservation to reappropriate approximately $3.4 million of funds that are available for either projects that were completed under budget or projects that didn't get going for one reason or another to the Village Safe Water infrastructure projects for first-time service projects. On 6B, and environmental conservation, they're requesting a scope change for a project that's occurring up in Haines on their water system. Part of the original appropriation was for the Barnett water tank. They're hoping to use about $50,000 of the remaining funds for a roof on the Tower Road water tank, with your approval. Line 7, Mr. Chairman, has to do with a reappropriation from it's line 18 of the spreadsheet, section 7 of the bill. A reappropriation for the Department of Health and Social Services of approximately $81,000 from the Eligibility Information System project to continue work on the Information System Replacement Project. On line 19, you'll see under the Department of Law a section of judgments and settlements. Currently, that request is for $1,570,200. There's a list in the backup of four settlement items that have been brought forward. And as you know, as we hear about these during, as long as you're in session, we bring forward new ones to amend them to the bill. We also have on line 20 of the spreadsheet language in the supplemental bill that you've approved in the past, so that if there are additional judgments brought forward in the current fiscal year, that we are allowed to pay them, and that way we don't have to pay if there's additional interest that would result from delaying till next year. So that's been helpful language, and that's in the bill. So on page 4 of 8, Mr. Chairman, on line 21 of the spreadsheet. Under Military and Veterans Affairs, we're requesting a reappropriation of about $350,000 for Alcantara facility projects for covered storage there. And on the next line, 22, again for Military and Veterans Affairs, an estimate of about $195,000 to be used at Allison Air Force Base for covered storage. On line 23, for Military and Veterans Affairs, there is an arbitration settlement of $111,300. This was related to a situation at the Alaska Military Youth Academy, and this has been this is the judgment in that case. Page 5 of the spreadsheet, on line 24, this relates back to our discussion on fire suppression. We are asking for a language section that would allow us to pay for to cover spring fires. As you know, April, May, and June can be a busy time in fire season. It's very difficult to predict what that might look like or what those costs might be. We have an estimate of $5 million. I believe that's similar to what we included in the supplemental bill last year as well. On line 25, we have a...
Karen, I'm sorry. Senator Fairclough has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to follow along in the blue book that has more detail on the backup documents, and I see on page 25 under your tab, 10 through 14, the first page referring to the $5 million that you just spoke about, that it is speaking to a separate supplemental request for the $22 million, which we already talked about. So that's almost $30 million for fire suppression with trying to hold five in the bank, basically. 22 spent, five.
That would be correct.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, on line 25 of the spreadsheet under the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, you'll see a settlement related to cleanup at the old Quinnagook Airport of $164,600.
Karen?
Yes.
If I may, what kind of cleanup was that?
Mr. Chairman, I think it had to do with that a building, cleaning up a building or removing a building, and they discovered some hazardous materials within the building. So they had to do some additional work. There was some litigation that ensued. The result of that was the judgment that's before you. And I believe I have someone from DOT that could give you more information on it, but I think that's generally what the situation was.
Okay. I think I'm good.
Okay.
Senator Bishop?
It appears to me in the backup it was contaminated materials in apparently a DOT old storage shed for snow removal equipment, and so that's the building they cleaned up.
Yeah, it just seems like a lot of money for cleanup.
Mr. Chairman Scott, anytime you got the word hazardous materials and overpacked drums, it gets expensive really quick.
Okay. All right, Karen, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, on line 26, we're requesting under the Office of the Governor, this is the fuel trigger, our statewide fuel trigger allocation. I know you're all familiar with this, but it was some language that the legislature inserted several years ago, which has really helped all agencies address fuel and utility costs rather than putting, you know, an amount in the base every year. This fuel trigger has allowed for some adjustments. What we're seeing over time, and of course with the changing environment of prices of fuel and utilities, that we've seen some variances in what and how those allocations work. What we're seeing for the University of Alaska specifically in the current year is a shortfall, and what we're recommending here is that if we increase their percentage from what's currently allocated at 10% to 15% of the total, plus or minus 3%, that we believe with the existing resources in the appropriation today, we can allocate a little bit more to the university to cover their costs. Now, I also wanted to mention that in the 15 budget, we have proposed a reduction in the fuel trigger from the total of $36 million down to 30. I think there's some additional analysis that we need to do on how that is going to affect departments. And certainly we're looking very carefully at whether or not those percentages need to be adjusted. But I think one of the improvements that have really occurred over the past several years is the analysis that we are working on with departments so that we have a little bit more apples to apples when we're looking at fuel and utility costs on a statewide basis. So it's been a really helpful way to approach fuel and utility costs, but I think we still need to have there's some adjustments that need to be made.
Okay, very good. Senator Kelly?
Ms. Rayfield, I assume from the last thing you said, was going to ask if the 15 budget was going to reflect an increase in the university's fuel allocation, but you're going to go through it. You're probably going to go through a lot of machinations between now and then as you reduce the overall amount, so we really couldn't anticipate in the amendments seeing anything until you've made some further decisions. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, yes, that's correct. I think it would be premature for us to change the number, but just know that we're looking very careful at that, and I think that that's an opportunity for us to maybe do some adjustment to those numbers, but I don't think we're going to be ready by by the 30th day.
So, Karen, if I may, is there any other departments or agencies that are experiencing shortfalls, or is it just the university?
Mr. Chairman, the university is the one, of course, when you're looking at the number of facilities that they have on a statewide basis. The other department, which is, of course, the largest piece of the fuel trigger, is the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, not only from their equipment and facilities side, but also from the marine highway side. And that's been part of the analysis that we've been going through, how much of DOT's allocation is needed. We think we can make some adjustments there. They have had some excess fuel trigger money that we've dealt with in the past. With the current prices and what they're able to get from boat purchases, there's, I think, some room to juggle that. But we really are relying on the analysis to help us with that.
Okay, very good. Senator Bishop?
Ms. Rayfield, I would ask that you've taken a special consideration in light of what's transpired in Fairbanks the last 2 days as you walk through your modeling on looking forward on this 15% increase, at least for fiscal year 2015. You anticipate there could be a slight bump in electricity in Fairbanks until we walk through that. I know it's new and there's a lot of things out there, but just keep that in mind and
certainly
going forward. Thank you.
Certainly. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I just lost my place on the spreadsheet. Just a sec here. Okay.
Yeah, 26.
Okay, here we go. Okay, we were just talking about the fuel trigger. Thank you. So on line 27 of the spreadsheet, and then also flipping over to line 28, we have some adjustments in our debt service component relating to federal reimbursements, eligible federal reimbursements for certain series of bonds that were issued. So on line 27, you'll see that we're requesting a fund switch from federal authorization to general funds, and then on line 28 of the spreadsheet, you'll see just the reverse. We're backing out general funds, and it has to do with the federal funding available for reimbursement of these bonds. On line 29 and 30, we have two pieces related to the international airports and their revenue bonds. What we see, and I think typically you see this in the supplemental bill, the international airport goes through their review of their passenger service funds, their construction accounts, and they make adjustments to basically maximize what they can for their debt service costs. So you'll see some fund switches here on lines 29 and 30 that are in the other funds categories. Line 31, as I mentioned earlier, we have disaster relief funding requested before you of $19,961,500. And as you know, there's a whole process we go through of notifying the legislature and walking through the disasters that occur throughout the year and bring you a request, because typically we have $5 million capital in general funds in the disaster relief fund. We cannot predict what those might look like and what ultimately will qualify for federal assistance in disasters, so we bring that forward to you. On 932, kind of a new approach perhaps for you to consider is similarly to the supplemental that we've asked for in fire suppression. We're asking for perhaps some language to help address disaster relief efforts that might occur in the spring of this year. After the legislature adjourns, there'll still be the process of disaster declaration and the process of walking through what will be eligible from other funding sources. But we thought this might be a way to help address some of those efforts for potential spring flooding or other events that occur. We have on line 33, bill section 15, there will be a series of ratifications, and those are actually listed on the bottom of page 7, starting on line 41 and going through the end on page 8. But ratifications basically are zero balancing. All of these items are transactions that occurred in a prior fiscal year. You'll see a dollar amount. It usually has to do with funds that were either disallowed or not recoverable, for the most part, from federal programs. When you look at the list of ratifications, for example, on line 41, you'll see one for economic development, and there's an appropriation number there with a, you'll see a 12 at the end. That will tell you it's fiscal year 12. If you go down to line 42, you'll see one for health and social services for senior and disability services. There's an 09. That was from fiscal year 09. So it's an assortment of transactions that occurred in a prior fiscal year that, in order for us to basically zero balance those terminated appropriations, we need to ask you for approval for ratifications. So you'll see that in the supplemental bill. On line 34, this is basically lapsing, talks about specific sections that were for reappropriation of capital funds, and these are capital projects, so they have the same lapse as a capital project. On line 35, we're referring to the disaster relief appropriation, that actually goes into a fund, so it doesn't lapse. And then line 36 is the effective date of the entire bill, which would be the last day of session, April 20th, if that's the last day of session.
We hope it's sooner, but that's...
Okay. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that's the supplemental.
Very good, Karen. Thank you very much. We have questions. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Karen, I'm looking at under tab 15, page 36, and I was looking at the ratification for the Department of Health and Human Services, Senior and Disability Services, Medicaid, and it's saying that we're realizing a shortfall of $2,082,713.97. This shortfall was due to a decrement received in last year's supplemental. Based on projections, the department anticipated realizing savings in personal care and waivers, which were not realized. So can you speak to that a bit?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fairclough, I probably would need to call the department up here to talk about the what the supplemental, it apparently in 2009, from fiscal year 2009, there was a shortfall that had to do with the supplemental, and I don't know what the estimates were based on. I would need to get the department to respond to you directly on that. And I think we have someone from the department.
You could welcome to Senate Finance and state your name for the record.
Good morning.
Please.
My name is Sana Eford. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Finance and Management Services for Health and Social Services.
Great.
This, and again, I may have to go and get additional information on this also. This was much prior to my time with the department, as all of the ratifications are for the department here prior to that. But my understanding, there was an anticipation of savings that were going to occur because of the waiver for the personal care services waiver in the Medicaid program. And so the department asked for a decrement because the projections showed that they thought they were going to actually save money, and they did not realize that savings.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Senator Fairclough? Thank you, Samantha. Other questions for Ms. Rayfield? Don't see any. You did an excellent job, Karen, of keeping the supplemental budget down as much as possible. Can't really control the natural disasters. Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, just so that we don't walk away thinking something was done poorly, this particular budget has been held incredibly in check for the growth that we had seen in past years. And so that $2 million, even though we didn't realize it, they actually saved quite a bit of money there. So please don't take that inquiry as anything negative. The department has done a fantastic job in trying to hold down costs and bend that curve. Thank you.
Yeah. Our questions are just to learn and educate ourselves, not to...
Mr. Chairman, and if I could just say that it really is, our departments are doing an incredible job managing their budgets, and I think they've gotten that very loud and clear, so thank you.
Yep. No, it looks good. Senator Bishop.
I concur with that, but everything's debatable, and I'm still looking at some of the stuff that I did when I was at the Department of Labor between us and Hess, and I just wish Hess would write the check.
And I just wish the federal government would write that. Okay. If there's nothing else, Karen, thank you very much for joining us today. So I think that concludes our business for today. We had tomorrow available just for anything we didn't get finished, but by working overtime Monday night, I think we got our work done. So no need to have a meeting tomorrow. So we will adjourn till 9 o'clock on Monday. With that, we're adjourned.